Everyone is fixating on the $10 billion price tag for this new first home supply program. But, looking through the actual policy docs, the money isn't even the wildest part.
Oh, not even close.
It's what they've done to the banking regulations to make it all work.
It's definitely a case where the fine print matters more than the headline. But to understand why the government is doing this right now, I mean, it's February 2026. You have to look at the pressure cooker they're in. We're in the middle of that wealth tsunami we've talked about before.
That's the huge transfer of wealth from baby boomers to their kids.
Exactly. Something like $3.5 trillion is moving hands. So you have this flood of new buyers with inheritance cash. If the government just handed out more grants, more demand side stuff, they'd just be pouring gasoline on a fire.
Prices would just explode.
Completely. So they had to pivot. They've moved entirely to the supply side. They aren't just helping you buy a house. They are, in effect, physically building it for you.
Which brings us to this term that's all over the report, at cost pricing. It sounds good, but what does that actually look like on paper?
Well, it's all about the accounting. Think about a standard developer. The price you pay covers land, construction, marketing, and of course, their profit.
Sure.
The government is saying, we already own the land, so boom, strike that cost immediately. And since they aren't a private company, they strike the profit margin too.
Okay, so if you cut out the developer's profit, I mean, how much does that actually shave off the price?
It's significant. Industry margins are usually between, say, 15 and 25%. When you combine that with zero land cost, the estimates are pretty stark. Take a home in Perth with a market value of, let's say, $775,000. Under this program, it could hit the market at around $620,000.
So a 20% discount right out of the gate. But look, that helps with the price tag, but the price doesn't matter if the bank won't even talk to you. And didn't the banking regulator, APRA, just tighten the screws on lending?
They did. As of February 1st, we have these new guardrails on debt-to-income ratios. Basically, APRA told the banks they can't have too many risky loans on their books. So if a borrower's total debt is more than six times their income, the bank is very limited on how many of those loans they can approve.
Which sounds pretty prudent, right? If I'm drowning in debt, the bank shouldn't be giving me more.
Generally, yes. But here's the twist. That safety limit. It applies to existing homes. If you want to buy a brand new build or one of these government supply homes, you are exempt from the cap.
Wait, really? Isn't that a bit dangerous? You're telling people you're too risky to buy that old house, so here, have a loan for a shiny new one instead.
It is aggressive, yes. It's a deliberate loophole designed to steer capital. The government is basically prioritizing new housing stock over, let's say, short-term financial caution. Brokers are already pushing high-debt borrowers toward new builds. It's the only way they can get approved.
That is just wild. So you get the cheaper house and you get the loophole loan. I want to look at the math you highlighted in that Western Australia case study. Because when I read those numbers, I honestly thought it was a typo.
It does look like one, doesn't it? But it's just the power of stacking all these incentives together. Let's go back to that $775,000 home. Normally, you'd need a 20% deposit. That's $155,000 in cash.
Which, let's be honest, takes the average person years and years to scrape together.
Years. But watch what happens. First, the price drops to 620 because of the at-cost model. Then you use the 5% deposit scheme. Then you claim the $10,000 state grant. And finally, you layer on the help to buy shared equity scheme.
Okay, just hit me with the bottom line. What do I actually need in my bank account?
Your required upfront cash drops from $155,000 to $38,000.
$38,000.
$38,000.
That's a drop of over 100 grand.
What?
That completely changes the accessibility equation. But, and there's always a but, we're talking about building 100,000 homes. The paperwork is great, but do we actually have the bricks and the people?
And that is where this whole fantasy hits a very hard wall. We have the money. We have the buyers. We just might not have the hands. KPMG just put out a forecast for this year, and they're predicting a 30% shortfall in housing supply. We're missing about 43,000 homes from what we actually need to build.
Is that just because materials are so expensive right now?
That's part of it. Costs are at a 30-year high. But the bigger problem is what people are calling a vacuum of trades. We simply don't have enough electricians, plumbers, carpenters. On top of that, productivity in the sector is actually dropping.
So you could sign the contract, put your 38 grand down, and then you just wait.
You wait. And you hope your builder doesn't go bust while you're waiting. It's a real race. The financial side has never looked better for a first home buyer, but the physical reality on the ground has rarely been worse.
A huge opportunity wrapped in a logistical nightmare.
Precisely. And that leaves us with a final thought to chew on. With 100,000 homes reserved, but a massive shortage of trades to build them, will that at-cost price tag actually survive? Or will construction delays and cost blowouts eat up all those savings before anyone gets their keys in 2027?